It is Thursday, the 14th of March, and this is episode 155 of Digital Outbox. Welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, and as ever, Ian's with me. Hello, Ian.
Good evening.
And I am in a strange mood tonight, so do forgive me if I stray off topic.
I am as well. I am strangely jovial, yet in a rage.
Yes, let's get to the rage a bit later. It's quite fun. I'm looking forward to it. Start with the news, as ever. And we're going to start with Google News. In fact, most of tonight's podcast is very Google focused.
I should point out last night I thought, you know, I think we'll skip this week. And then Google decided to do things.
They've done quite a lot. So the first thing they're doing is shuffling people around. We've had Sundar Pichai. I stumbled. It was always going to happen. Sundar Pichai has taken over from Andy Rubin as head of Android. He's already head of Google and, sorry, he's already head of Chrome and apps. So he's actually taking over and, I guess, going to unify all those things together.
And, well, this is the thing. This has kicked off intense speculation.
Of course it has. It always does when anything happens.
So Andy Rubin, he was a guy that founded Android. So, Google bought Android and bought him as the guy that was heading up the company at the time. So he's been there in charge of Android for, 5 years, probably?
It could even be a little bit longer, but yeah, okay.
There's that whole dubiety about who came first. Was it iOS or Android or whatever and all that nonsense? So
his history is he was the founder of Android and Google bought them, right?
Okay. Yes. And what he's now going to move over to Google X. So Google X is their kind of, Skunk Works, their internal kind of
scattergun.
And that's where Google Glasses come out of. There's all the stuff around cars that they've been doing. And they've also confirmed he's moving over, but they've also said within the next month we're going to announce a brand new product coming out of Google X. And I don't know if that's going to be timed with I/O, which is in May, which is a bit further away.
That's quite interesting. I mean, it says here, or it's been said that he decided to move. Whether that is true or not, who knows? Maybe this product is exciting enough that he wants to move across and feels he's done what he needed to do with Android. I mean, Android, now that I'm a fan, obviously is in a good shape at the moment.
Absolutely. What he's talked about as well is, Larry Page says he wants more moonshots, so this was something that they said about Android, from where they've started to where they are now. It's just phenomenal.
And they also
announced that it's 750 million activations now. And then looking at the kind of predicted numbers, they will hit a billion August, September time this year. The planet's got 7 billion people. 1 in 7 people have an Android device.
Yeah, it's mad.
At some point this year is phenomenal.
I think, the kind of person that likes starting up and setting up companies is not the kind of person that likes to take them into maturity. So maybe that's the phase it's at now. It's moving into a more mature phase, less exciting for your entrepreneurial and ideas type person. So, he might not have been shoved. It could just be a sensible decision.
And he said in his own kind of posting on it that he's got that entrepreneurial spirit and he's an inventor. And there's also some talk as well that he wasn't comfortable, being in charge of massive teams, which obviously Android now is. It won't just be a 10-man startup or whatever. It will be a behemoth.
And I guess you have to balance Google's so integrated that I guess now balancing off everything against each other probably becomes frustrating as well.
But I've kind of scribbled down some notes because I knew I'd forget them all. it's interesting the kind of different takes you can put on this. So you've got Chrome, the guy leading up Chrome OS is now leading up Android. Does that mean they're going to merge? I personally still don't think in the next year they're going to see a merger as such.
But it's almost the philosophy of it, isn't it? If you've got the same controller, it means they've got their fingers in those two different pies and they can work out the best way forward sometimes to potentially merge going forward or just take the best of one and give them to the other.
And that's
we could yet see Chrome OS disappearing. so long as you can get an Android device that will work on the Chromebooks out there and offer up what they need.
I think people for a long time have said, why bother with Chrome OS? Put Android on. It's obviously capable enough if you look at the tablet. So it's capable enough to go and drive, you know, a laptop. And if you look at the app market, you've got a massive app market, you know, and massive penetration on Android and very little on Chrome.
But then again, you can't probably, you shouldn't just disregard Chrome OS as a stupid thing, as in something that needs to be just replaced, because there will be massively, you know, good things about Chrome OS as well. I mean, Chrome OS, as much as anything, has driven on just the standard Chrome browser to different levels, really. I mean, so I don't think it'll be a case of chopping one for the other. I think it will be a case of convergence at some point. If we can get apps running in the browser like we have already, then why can't you have a whole operating system on a phone that does the same thing?
No, absolutely. One interesting point, and you were just saying taking the best of maybe one from the other, there were lots of people talking about maybe this is Android apps being available in Chrome. So you still have a Chrome OS and the benefits about security and how it auto-updates and all the good stuff that people like about Chrome OS, and it's lightweight, but you will have access to actually start using Android apps.
Once it's powerful enough, then some, you know, common code bases between the two, there's no reason why not. Having said that, the developer software for Android, last time I used it, the SDK, the virtual software running the Android was actually very slow. So maybe it's a little way off yet.
The other point was, in the last 6 months, all the big operating systems have seen their chiefs change. So Windows 8, or Windows, he's out and the new guy was in. iOS, we've had Craig Federighi come in, and now we've got Sundar taking over.
Yeah, that is quite an interesting point, isn't it? Yeah, it shows OSs are, you know, highly strategic and important, so I guess it's important to have the right people at the right time.
I think that's why Google are still going with Chrome OS. It's almost like they've put some money down in both, and they're seeing where it ends up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, I, as much as anything, I think the learning experience through Chrome OS has certainly driven cloud and other things forward. I think we shouldn't underestimate that, because until you force yourself not to be in a basic computer environment where you're used to having local storage and stuff like that, I don't think you truly set up the infrastructure and stuff to, you know, or work through the problems. And they have pretty much worked through those problems now. And I think we're seeing that.
True.
Okay, also at Google, we've had a split in their Maps and Commerce. So Jeff Huber, who was in charge of both those, is now moving aside. And those two divisions are going to be consumed into, help me out here, what they're going to be consumed into.
So Maps is going to search, and Commerce is going to be put inside advertising, which kind of makes a bit more sense.
Yeah.
And again, so Jeff Huber is another guy that's moving over to Google X. So Google X was...
So that's getting some big names in that division.
Exactly. And the way Google had split a couple of years ago, when Herr Schmidt was still in charge, and when he moved over, you had Sergey Brin. Basically, he looked after Google X, and this was their internal, I call it skunk watch. This was their kind of... Where can we go with things? You know, so this was the all autonomous car, Google Glass.
Is a self-driving cars.
But it's the products that they hope to drive the company forward over the next, you know, 10, 20 years. I mean, this is where they want to go. And you had Larry Page looking after the rest, and he's done his famous, you know, doubling down and let's focus on what we want to focus on.
How many cliches can we do?
Exactly. But I mean, that's two big guys that are moving over, you know, from the kind of traditional side of the company it does make me think that they have at least a couple of projects that they're now wanting to take out.
Move more into the mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's probably really exciting over there as well. Like I say, running a massive corporation isn't that exciting most of the time. You know, you're dealing with drudgery and working through problems, whereas, you know, you get the excitement of the, ooh, look at that, self-driving cars. What would you rather be working on?
Exactly. And I mean, if you look at Google Glass, I mean, the thing for me, it's not even the technology, but it's now taking advantage of everything that Google has. And we've talked about how you need to almost sign yourself away to get the best out of Google. You know,
Google Now shows exactly that. Once you give it away to everything, it works. It's pretty amazing.
And it's how exciting you, I mean, it's working out, okay, so what's version one of this going to do? you know, and it'll give you the maps and it'll give you Google Now and all the kind of things that we're kind of expecting it to do. But then where is that going to be in 2 years' time?
Yeah, oh, what will that so bonkers, exciting. It could be bonkers, yeah. It so could be exciting. Minority Report, basically. So yeah, mapping into search. I guess actually mapping is searching, really.
Yep.
That kind of makes sense. And we're seeing more and more integration between those two anyway. When you search, you always get maps now back.
Absolutely. Things,
you know, as it's, you know, it's another one of their, whatever they call it, the graph, you know, where you've got objects that are actually.
And if you look at Bing,
have locations.
Well, if you look at Bing and Nokia, they've always linked, you know, search and maps. And I always in my head associated search and maps to Google as well.
Yeah.
It was always one and the same for me.
That makes kind of sense.
Yeah.
So there you go, some movements, and I guess we will monitor and see over the next 6-12 months what's going to come out of that. In fact, we'll probably hear more about it at I/O and stuff.
And I/O is only 2 months away. It's sold out.
Yeah, it comes quick, doesn't it?
It's sold out in 50
minutes.
What
are they going to get free this year?
Exactly. Well,
yeah, that's why it sells out. People don't give a crap about their talks.
If you know if I/O was in London and you could spend £1,000, you'd be there.
I'd be there in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
£1,000 for like £5,000 worth of stuff.
I mean, imagine,
like I say,
imagine,
just turn up to the keynotes.
Imagine they hand out like a Pixel and a Google Glass.
That's probably what they are going to hand out this year, right? Sounds about right.
Or maybe with a new version of the queue.
maybe not. another Google news. Told you it was all Google focused. They have started banhammering ad blocking apps within their Play Store, which isn't unexpected, I guess. But they started announcing to developers of you know, ad blocking software that they would start removing them from their Play Store, saying that they infringed on several of their agreements. And I, for very good reason, I guess that's where they make their business. So they are stopping their store from being able to block other people's third party advert streams. Now, it doesn't stop you getting these products elsewhere. That's one of the things about Android. You know, it's an open marketplace, and you can install from third party marketplaces. So you can still go and get these things. Or if you're a developer, you can still distribute them. You just can't do it through the main Play Store.
It got a bit of traction because people were saying, boo, that's not open. And a lot of the Apple guys are like, there you go, there's Google showing you it's not open. But
that's exactly the point that we've always made.
Exactly.
It's fine for someone to say you can't do this in our backyard, but at least there's another way into that. You know, yep. If someone really wants that bit of software, they can still go and get it. And that's the difference. With Apple, you can't. If Apple slammed the door, that's it.
Well, if Apple slammed the door, that's it, unless you jailbreak. And with Google, the door slammed unless you tick the little checkbox and you install viruses in your Android tablet.
Well, that's true. They're the choices, but at least you have that choice.
No, definitely. And I mean,
you've got your inbuilt jailbreak tick box,
and it's dead easy. And you can take it further. You can start to root your device, and it's then totally open. You know, you can then do what you like, which I've never actually done. I might just do one day, just as a little experiment.
To be honest, though, they're probably kicking up more of a stink than, you know, these bits of software. They're all very well and good, but most people don't install them. I can see why they want to ban them, but actually they've probably made more of a stink for themselves than they would have just if they'd left them be.
What's strange for me is I actually have it on my, I have it in the Chrome browser on my desktop. I don't bother, it just never crossed my mind to do it on a tablet.
Yeah.
A lot of the content I read from are all tied in through, you know, a feed reader, or they're in through Flipboard, they're in through
really
something else.
Them anyway, yeah.
And it's no big deal.
And some of that kind of not being exposed to adverts is maybe behind then Google's next round of spring cleaning, which they've done. So they, a while back, they did a massive cull of a lot of their experimental products or products that they felt.
So it was a year ago. That was their first spring clean.
12 months ago.
Yeah.
Well, last spring, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow, amazing. and this year they are continuing the cull, of which most you won't care about. So there's some APIs which they're shutting down. Their GUI builder, they're going to get rid of some of their widgets. Some of their calendar APIs, they're moving into different places and shutting others down. Google Building Maker within their Google Earth, they're getting rid of that now. although you can still get your models out, of course. All this is fine, right? We're still going. Ooh, clanger. Google Reader, chop.
Wah!
Wah! And that's pretty much the reaction of about 250,000 users.
But no.
Wah!
I'm just going to settle in my chair here.
Yeah, here we come. I told you there was a bit of rage, and here it comes.
And somehow I've managed to tie this to the Pope. So...
Brilliant.
So, and I can, for me, I always gauge, I know when something's wrong when I fire up my Twitter bot. And you'll see the like, there's a, you know, so in the morning, I'll usually have a couple hundred new tweets. This morning, a couple hundred only took me back to 4 a.m.
And a couple hundred only pressing took me, that more.
Exactly.
More.
A couple
more.
Hundred took me back to 3. And then 2. And I'm thinking, something really bad's happened. And it was more than, as I said, it was more than the Pope. You know, so I've never seen so many photos of white smoke, but
and Jim Bowen
and Jim Bowen, that was can't be a bit of bully. And so yeah, this was and I think it's the type of people I follow, and it's probably the type of person I'm as well. Google Reader is still important for me. I don't visit the website, but I still manage my feeds through it, and I use it in Reader and I use it in Press on my Android tablet. That's how I get my news, and I really like my clients to allow me to browse lots of content quickly. I'm not interested in a flipboard for the type of stuff that I generally read every day. Not interested in a flipboard and looking through, you know, 3 posts a page, and it takes a long time. I am now pretty trained, pretty skilled in going through lots of content very quickly, yep, and focusing on what I need.
I mean, and there is, other than RSS Reader, there is nothing that can get all that content in one place in such a streamlined way.
There's some things you can do. I've certainly dabbled, and I have a couple of good Twitter lists now, and the same in Google Reader. I have a couple of good lists that allow me to actually spin through quite quickly. But it's not, for me, it's not the same, because a lot of the lists are very US-centric. And for me, I stay in the UK. For the podcast, we try and keep it UK-based. It's actually, there's not a lot of UK services out there that you know, so if you look at TechMeme, that's a great way. See if I'm behind on everything, I can go to TechMeme and you get that day, you're up to date with the tech news.
Yep.
And I've got no doubts about that, but not in the UK.
No, you'll, that's it. We are sadly lacking.
You'd be lucky if you get like one little story. And that's usually because something really quite big's happened over here, and it kind of bubbles up.
So basically, what Google are saying is that it has quite a loyal following. They're aware that people love it, but they're also aware that most people have never heard of it and would never use it. Their existing existing base of users is also decreasing. So this is the angle from Google. Now, a lot of people have said, this is just another way of dragging people to go and use Google Plus, because obviously one way of, you know, replacing that news is to sign up to lots of Google Plus accounts or subscribe to lots of Google Plus accounts from the tech news people, and then you will still get a feed effectively of the same kind of information coming into your Google Plus account. But you do have to pollute your Google Plus with a whole ton of tech feeds, and it's not the same as having the RSS reader.
It's not the same.
It's slower and it stutters. Google Plus on iPad for me. Basically, when you're scrolling through the stories, it's all very well, but they take a little time to render, and
oh, definitely,
it stutters, and it's frustrating to use.
And it is more visual. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the way I use, I mean, Reader, which I use, or as I said, Press on the Android. Very, you know, it's almost like the headline in some text. And I'm browsing through lots very quickly, and it's like, oh, that catches my eye, that catches my eye, and that catches my eye. And then
that's why we don't hear phone stories, because they never catch our eyes.
you see this every week, and every week we've got a phone story. And now I don't know, is this some sort of running internal joke?
I don't know, is it? Shall we make one?
I seem to remember we had a conversation 2.5 years ago saying, yeah, we're not going to do phones at all.
Yeah, we hate phones.
Yeah. Even though it consumes our every waking minute.
And I've mentioned it every podcast since. Yeah.
But there are alternatives. And I saw lots of people this morning tweeting about, you know, well, you can use Twitter. And I was like, no, I don't think so. You can set up lists and you can kind of get the same news. And it's the same in Facebook and Google+. You can set up lists.
You can't. It's harder to get into content and come back again. And I don't know, it's not quite as streamlined.
I saw other people saying the social media now surfaces important stuff, so you don't need to read the rest. And it's like, that's fine for Google Reader shutting, or there's a new Samsung Galaxy 4. It's not great for Chris has just raced around Silverstone and here's a new post. And a lot of the, I guess what got me into Google Reader in the first place was when I first started blogging, you know, 10 years ago. I think it was 10 years ago, actually. So it was around 10, 12 years ago I first started my blog. That's, and Google, you know, some sort of RSS, I think it was blog lines at the time we were all using. That was a place to oh, you know, my mate Gordon's done a new post, or, you know, a couple of guys down south with a new post. That was my way of keeping in touch. And still to this day, that's more reliable than Twitter. I saw some other people saying everybody that's got a Google Reader account or a blog has a Twitter account. And that's true. But a lot of people don't cross post. A lot of people don't say, I have a new blog post, go and read it.
And you don't, and you know, that kind of saying that Twitter does the same thing. You don't want to hear what other people think is an important bit of news. You want to pick and choose for yourself. Pick and choose for yourself.
No, absolutely. And that was the beauty of it. It was allowing you to, and yes, you can kind of get that in Flipboard, but it's not the same. It's somebody curating. It's like if you go to one of the creative feeds, it's somebody curating it for you. It's not you making the choice about what you want to follow.
So what are they saying are good alternatives then? If you have got a Reader account and it's going to go, there's a petition out to stop it going. But
there's a petition.
It's not going to work.
Crazily, they did it at the White House and they shut it down. So what's that got to do with the White House? And it's exactly. I read that and people were saying, yeah, let's show their support. And it's like, stop. There are actually quite a few alternatives. So Feedly, which is an app, which has been out for a long time on iOS and Android, it actually imports your feeds and will run as a synchronization engine. So that will actually do a light for Google Reader and you can start to manage it from there. And by the looks of the blog post that they've done today, it's fairly straightforward for other services. So other apps like, you know, Reader and Press that we've mentioned should be able to swap over. So that's one option.
That sounds positive.
And it's free. And I guess the one point we've not touched on, are we yet again relying on a free service? And then when somebody takes it away, you're like, you can't take it away. It's like, they can. Google in their post said it's a very different internet now.
But then even if it was a paid service, they can still just take it away. It doesn't stop them doing that.
And that's the thing. I pay for Flickr and we saw Flickr, you know, depreciate over the years and now seem to be investing again, which is good. So Feedly is definitely one option. Another one, which is maybe a bit out there, is one called Fever. This is from a guy called Sean Inman who did Mint, it was a whole load of browser stats. That's a paid for, so you pay $30, but you actually have to self-host it. So you will need some sort of domain or some sort of server space somewhere to self-host. But it does a good job of trying to look through your posts and saying, actually, this is important stuff. And in your feeds that you follow, you know, here's a whole load of duplicates and this is a hot thing right now because it's doing a whole load of let's go and look socially what's happening as well. So that's one I might give a try, actually. FeedWrangler was a service that people were tweeting about today. This is a programmer who was about to set up a Google Reader equivalent. You know, whether they could I think it's been talked about for 2 years that Google Reader is disappearing. You know, you've seen it, you know, Google Plus came in and it stopped some of the sharing options and there's nothing new happening. He's going to launch feedwrangler.net. And there was a couple other alternatives. One's called NewsBlur, which is a paid alternative, so $1 a month. And another one called the Old Reader, which is in beta, and they've tried to replicate the old Google Reader.
Before
Google Plus came in and took away a lot of the sharing option, but it did make it more difficult to share. You had to share via Google Plus and that was it. You couldn't just share out onto some of the other products. So there's actually quite a lot of options. It wouldn't surprise me if more come out over the next few months.
In some ways we want one to be dominant, really, though, don't you?
Well, you do, but you want one to be dominant and also you want one that you know can scale. You know, so the NewsBlur, which got loads of retweets last night, died. They just couldn't cope with the amount of people that were trying to join it. And we saw the same when Delicious closed. Pinboard all of a sudden was under great strain because everybody was like, where can I go? Pinboard, go. And they were importing, you know, 5 years of archives.
Yeah.
And it was putting the service under strain. And I think you're going to see it with these. It's like, A, can they survive?
I'm not sure it's quite that big, but yeah, okay.
Well, you say that, I think for a small community, because Pinboard doesn't have, you know, a million users. It's got that a really small but dedicated and passionate community, and I think it's the same with Google Reader. You're going to find that tech community, and it is a very vocal tech community, because all day my Twitter stream has been dominated by Google
Reader.
Yeah, of
course it's vocal, but that's why you're in that space. We're talking about that space. That's why it's noisy. Not because it's actually important on the grand scheme of things.
No. And we do have time. It's 1st of July. You know, so that's like, and also, it's, there are other ways of doing it. It's not going to be like all of a sudden, you know, you're cut off from the internet.
Might start some innovation again.
You know, I felt quite sorry. The guys behind press put up a post, and I felt quite sorry for them. Well, it's been a pretty rough day for us today. First, only one of the two of us got an IO ticket. So IO was said sold out in, you know, 50 minutes. Then we learned that Google Reader is going to be closing its doors on July 1st. This was a huge shock. We didn't see it coming. We've put a lot of ourselves into press and have pushed ourselves very hard. We want everyone to know we'll continue to develop press. Next up is version 1.2. After that, we'll be going to look into what other Google Reader alternatives that are out there we can tie into. We're hoping that a strong competitor will emerge in the next few months. So it's exactly what you've said. You want somebody dominant rather than trying to support five or six alternatives.
Yeah, because that just gets messy. But then again, that's if press have got somewhere to live. Maybe they need to start, instead of relying on other services, have, you know, their own integration.
The good thing is, and there's been a couple of posts similar today, this is a real chance for innovation now. Who would launch a service against Google Reader? It's really difficult when Google was there, but now that it's disappearing, there's a real opportunity. I'll be honest, I would pay £20 a year for something like that. You know, we've said the same with Delicious. I get enough value of a bookmarking service that I would go and pay. So next spring, when they shut down Gmail.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? They won't, but yeah, you're right. You know, yeah, you're right.
Mail usage is declining.
Yeah.
So what if they shut down Calendar?
Again, they won't, because it's too integrated into everything, isn't it?
Oh, where's my diary? Dear diary, on this day, Chris said.
Yeah. It's Kindle. Wow, we've moved on from Google. We're onto Amazon. Kindle Fire HD has come to the UK. I'd forgotten about it, to be honest. I forgot that we hadn't even got it yet. So we've had the Kindle Fire. We just hadn't got the HD version, which is their much higher resolution screen.
Maybe you're right. I thought we had the HD, but it was a small one.
Maybe you're right.
I don't know, to be honest.
They've released the other version we didn't have, which basically cost $229 for a 16 GB version, or $259 for a 32 GB. You can add £10 onto that if you don't want screensavers, adverts in your screensaver.
Yes.
8.9-inch screen and like full HD resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1080p.
12 inch. So. Pretty high, you know, as in pretty high pixel density and Dolby Digital Plus audio. That's pretty impressive.
Yep.
Got a gig RAM and you are into the Amazon infrastructure. It's kind of gone off my radar. So we've talked about it before, so let's not go too far into it. But if you are in the market for a Kindle Fire, go get one.
Your reviews were average to good. It's a decent price. The only thing I didn't like, Wi-Fi only in America has dropped to $269. So we're paying £229. They're $269.
It's still better than some of the ratios we've seen. You know, we are dealing with.
Just feels a bit dirty.
Yeah, it does. But that's less dirty than some of them. Netflix speed index. So Netflix are launching stats, basically, and letting you see how different providers are dealing with their network traffic on average. So if you are a Netflix subscriber and want to know how which ISP to go with, they're releasing now the stats that show you. You go to ispspeedindex.netflix.com and you can go and have a look.
And you have
Netflix?
No.
Nor am I. Don't really care then.
The interesting thing was just speeds. So they were very close between Virgin, BT and O2. And Sky, I think they're all between like 2.2 and 2 meg on average. And then there's a bit of a drop to talk and everything everywhere.
And interesting, all the graphs are heading up now since they released this site.
Yeah. I wish YouTube would do the same. Because every so often I get real pauses on it.
So do I. And, we've got fat enough pipes that it's not a problem our end.
Yeah.
And it could be a Google thing. It could be Google not streaming out quick enough. Or it could be the ISPs just saying, hang on a second. Whoa. So,
I know we've been Google dominant, but who do you think the problem is?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Granted. Speeds in the UK, while we're on speeds, we've got average speeds now in the UK of 12 megabits per second. I keep saying megabits per second. You know what?
Wow.
Year ago, that would have been impressive. Because that we didn't even have these massive super fast broadband speeds. So that is pretty impressive.
No, it's 6 months ago. I'm just reading it. So it's not that I know these things. But six months ago, it was only 9.
I can't say that fiber has brought me, other than uploading a YouTube video, which seems to take 2 seconds rather than, you know, 4 days. I can't say that fiber has offered me anything day to day that I've been that spectacularly, well, that was that spectacularly different from, say, 12 megabits per second. I think that speed is pretty impressive for most things.
No, absolutely. Apart from torrents.
Fair enough. And I don't torrent, so I, you know.
Okay, no scripts. But yeah, it's a good speed. It's and what they're saying is they reckon that every year? Oh, it's doubling every couple of years.
Okay.
Well, couple of years from now, they reckon the average will be 24, which isn't too bad. And interestingly, Netflix are saying within the next 2 years they'll start to stream 4K.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I don't
think even TV, No. That seems a bit far-fetched. But things move quicker than you can ever imagine.
I always have an issue with what they stream at 1080p, because they say it's 1080p, and yes, it
but
is that
really
resolution.
Not. But it's 1080p, but with about the JPEG compression quality of about
exactly.
2.
So the bit rate's really bad. And and you can spot it against, you know, you watch a Blu-ray and it looks, there's no pixelation, there's no gradients or anything. You watch something streamed, you're like, ouch.
Let's put it this way, even your Sky TV is a massive difference between watching a Blu-ray and watching an HD channel just because of that bit rate. If they can't pump it down from, you know, the satellite via a one-way stream, then they're going to really, really struggle over
the
internet.
But then I know people that still think a screener's good enough. So, hey-ho. No telling people. No telling them at all.
They don't listen to you, do they? That's why you do a podcast, because no one
exactly. Voice of reason. Thanks for that.
That's fine. 3D printing. We haven't talked about this for a while. So a lot of 3D printing is subject to licensing restrictions on the actual blueprints for actually getting things printed out. And I know that one of the most popular 3D printers, the sort of desktop one, came under criticism because it basically didn't release open source blueprints. They were all licensed and they were all potentially going to cost money. Because of that, we're now seeing companies come in and fill the void of effectively shipping out blueprints that you can use on your 3D printer that just flout copyright and licensing. And BBC started reporting on it, which is unusual considering how niche 3D printing is. But there you go, BBC have reported on it. And what's the DefCAD? Is it DefCAD?
DefCAD. And I think the reason they picked up on this was the guy behind it had basically put up parts for a 3D gun and proven that you could print them, assemble it, and shoot things.
Yeah, and it's the human condition, isn't it? You get this amazing technology, and what do people do with it? They work out how to print guns and destroy things.
Americans were involved, so.
It's true, sadly.
It is.
So the BBC obviously picked up on the fact that people were printing guns, which is just frightening, I guess. All the good things that could come out of this technology, and there we go, we got bad edge.
But DefCAD, the whole point behind this is that the chap behind this this printable gun, he wants DefCAD to be almost the Pirate Bay of 3D printing. So he wants to be able to, he will host basically a whole load of designs. So I'm sure we're going to see a whole load of, you know, X-Wings and all the kind of sci-fi stuff that you could want, all the different objects from Game of Thrones over there. I'm sure there'll be a whole load of Lego that you can just go and print out and assemble yourself.
Circumvent any sort of, well, or copy just from somewhere else that does have a license. Yeah.
And there's actually a couple other sites out there right now that are similar.
Well, when the community started, it was all open source. That you literally was supposed to be a free-for-all. The whole idea was that if someone showed you how to print a coat hanger, They would put it on the, you know, a central store, and on off you go. You never have to buy a coat hanger again because you can just print it. But say that open source has been reduced, obviously, as it's becoming more commercial, which is understandable.
And it would probably be wrong of me to say that I do know somebody at work who has got a design for a Firefly ship, who is waiting for a 3D printer to arrive just so he can test it.
Of course.
Of course.
I mean, let's say the desktop 3D printer is pretty amazing. I can't remember who made it now. I think we touched on it very briefly a while back on our podcast. It's, oh. It was something like $2,000 and you can have a 3D printer on your desk.
Yes.
Biggest news story of the week, though. Saved it till last. All over the BBC, all over the web, all over Twitter, everywhere. The boxer and the troll.
I shouldn't laugh.
No. So, some troll, now at Jimmy OB88, basically tweeted a boxer, Curtis Woodhouse, and said he was a disgrace. and basically, Curtis took exception to this, and being a boxer, he thought, right. And he offered a bounty. He said he offered £1,000 for anyone that would give him the address of Jimmy OB88. And someone clearly obliged. Curtis then tweeted that he was on his way.
He didn't just tweet he was on his way. He live tweeted his whole journey.
All the way. And he took little snapshots when he was at the end of the road. He said, right, anyone going to tell me the number of his house? At which point, Jimmy OB88 managed to tweet out saying, seems to be coming out, yeah, getting a bit out of control, this. And, you know, it was just a joke. I thought he was going to take it as a joke, and sorry. Clearly, bricking himself, I think, is the kindest way of saying it. And did apologise and said, yes, I'm in the wrong. Go away, don't punch me.
What a cock.
And Curtis basically then, has been on the everywhere around the news. They were on the news this morning, or they were both shaking hands. And Curtis has denied that he ever meant to go and punch him, although he did say, let's get it on, and all those kind of let's get ready to rumble stuff. So he's denied that he was ever going to confront him physically. And he has since said that this guy had been trolling him for a while. So it wasn't just this one tweet that bugged him. He said he's been threatening his family and stuff. Still a pretty horrible edge to this whole story.
Well, if this was just say it was you and Cheryl Cole had trolled you in some way and you decided to get her address and go and live tweet you going
down
there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be talking the podcast now. I would be
to give it a
in
slap.
Jail somewhere.
Yeah, and that's a bit, you know, it's
I don't think it's that. I think, okay, fair enough. You know, for me, it's not, it's just the threat of violence, you know, and that's clearly what it was.
Yeah, I don't like trolling.
And no, I don't like trolling, but then I don't like their reaction either. No. Even though it got quite a kind of "yeah, you go" when the internet got hold of it.
I've got to be honest; it's part of me did enjoy that this because I hate people that just think they can mouth off and
people that can hide behind it.
There's no way of getting back. There's no recompense, and it's wrong. But you're not. It's very hard to change, and all you need to do is look at the bottom half of the internet. Go and look at the comments and anything. And it's hideous.
The internet's broken because of humans.
Oh, it's shocking. Fix it, Google. Do something. You know, never mind Google Reader and bloody...
Maybe that's the next project.
Eyeglass. What? A comment system that that stops
that goes
trolls?
And sends boxes out to trolls.
That would be awesome.
So anyway, that was the biggest thing. Jeremy Vine on BBC Radio 2 today was had a massive call-in all about it. How exciting. Had the boxer on and everything.
The boxer and the troll. Oh, it's there again.
Third topic. Picks. Ian, you've got two picks for us.
I do have two picks. The first one is my first ever Android pick, I think. So this is an app called Pocket Casts. And actually, when I got the Nexus, I tried a couple of podcaster type apps and I was... pretty unsatisfying.
And you know what? I've tried for months and there's nothing. So is this a solution to my pocket car, my podcast?
This is fantastic.
Ooh,
so
exciting.
I'm going to have to break it to you gently.
Right.
It's a paid for app. And I know on Android people like break out
that's
a rash.
It's done. I can't get it.
Yeah. But no, it's really nice. Got great great discovery features on it. You know, so it's got chats and all that kind of nonsense and genres. It downloads in the background. It seems to keep everything in sync. So it does, and I've not got a couple of Android devices to test it, but it does claim to be, you know, you'll listen to half of Digital Outbox in one Android app and one Android device. If you go to the other one, it'll know where you are and all that kind of good stuff.
Is there a PC side to it? Can you listen to it on your PC or Mac?
This is a problem. I think I have an iOS as well. Lots of people have moved over and saying they're using, is it Downcast and Instacast on iOS? But I still listen to podcasts on my Mac and I want to keep in sync, and hence I will use the podcast app even though it's rubbish, because it keeps it in sync, and that's the bit that's missing. And this is the same. I don't think there is a client on your desktop.
Because most of the time I'm sat at my Mac or whatever during the day, and that's where most of the time I want to be listening and then take it away with me when I'm not there, because it's more convenient just to click play on your Mac.
Yep, and I might be wrong, and there might be some way of doing it, but I don't think
okay.
There is.
Okay, that's fine.
But however, it is a very good client. And even when you download Digital Outbox, press play, the feed was all there. So as I was listening, all the kind of, you know, all the links that we put in the show notes was there. Great little widget as well. Because one of the other ones I had was a horrible widget. This is a really nice widget. So again, you know, you could be away browsing elsewhere and you get your little widget you can go and control the podcast from.
Yeah, it looks great, yeah.
It is very good.
£2.70 currently on the Play Store.
Yeah, I put £2-ish.
There you go, £2.70.
£2.70.
And there you go. Maybe it'll reignite my podcasting listening on the move.
Yeah, and I'll maybe have a little search around for desktop and just see what options there are. The other one is a game for iOS, came out today, called Ridiculous Fishing. I'm a bit hazy about price because I just hit buy. I think it's about £150. Who knows?
That's the kind of guy you are.
Probably, well, yeah. Six months ago, I'd realised I'd spent over £500 on that. Yeah. So Ridiculous Fishing, really simple game, really nice graphics, very kind of 8-bitty, kind of classic. And basically, you cast your line, you tilt your iPhone or iPad to cast the line down, avoiding the fish. You try and get as deep as you go. And then once you actually hook something, you need to then try and catch it on the way back up. And when the hook comes out the water, you need to shoot the fish.
Shoot the fish.
Shoot the fish.
How telling ridiculous.
You, telling you. See you take away my Insta rage about Google Reader. That was perfect.
And is this going to last for more than 2 seconds? Is it going to keep your attention?
Well, while you were talking about the first story, I played a few games, so yeah.
There you go. When you get bored of our podcast, you can start playing Ridiculous Fishing.
It's the best thing ever, honestly. Go and buy it.
I might well do.
You have to. I might even gift you it just to say, exciting. Have it.
That is the end of our podcast. What a way to end.
Ridiculous fishing.
If you want to find out more about us, what we do, or about the news, you can go www.digitaloutbox.com. Email us, info@digitaloutbox.com. We're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. I am on Twitter as Cheesy UK. You can find out and follow all my racing antics at academyracer.co.uk. And Ian, where can we find you?
Twitter is Sweeper, blog is END.net, and your video from Silverstone last week was awesome. So if you haven't caught out Chris's website, go and take a look. It's great.
And more to come. Right, that's it. So we will speak at you again next week. See you then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Third topic.